Up this morning before the sun, grab my gear to get some fishing done. Jump in my pickup, give her a crank.
My stupid Toyota, which fishing key switch doesn't work right anymore. Oh, yeah. I got to be reminded of that. Thank you, Bobby. Okay. I got to be reminded that I bought the most reliable pickup on the planet, but yet I sit in the parking lot for, 15, 20 minutes, and it won't disengage the start. It won't shut off. It just...
Seriously?
Yeah, second time it's done it to me. I don't know what's up. I buy them, a 2007 Toyota. Bought it used, but it had 40,000 miles on it, 45,000 miles on it. You think it would be bulletproof for another 50 grand,
You would think.
Oh, well, life goes on. And this is a fishing show, not a complaint about your truck show.
You have the right to.
I have the right. Yeah, well, it's my radio show.
It's your truck, your money, you have the right to. This is all yours.
Yeah,
it says Fish and Frank all the way across the board. You pretty much can't miss it. Yeah. It's there.
Yeah, I get to whine if I want.
You got it.
Yeah, bread and cheese with that, Frank? Hey, we're going to have a picnic. My wine, the bread, cheese. Okay. Anyway. Okay. Anyway, by one of those days.
Yeah.
That's what happens when I come in late. Everything goes sideways on me. So, anyway, we have radio fishing, area fishing report to do here. What's up in the wide, wonderful, wacky, weird world of... I don't know.
It's chilly.
It's cold.
It's pretty darn cold.
It's nipply cold.
Yes.
And
don't tell me you should be where I'm from, because I'm here where I'm from, and it's cold.
Yeah, well, I
it's
can
a
tell.
Relative term.
I saw a flyer. I can tell you the Japanese circus is in town because there's a little nip in the air.
Nice.
Yeah, I'll get letters about that one.
Yeah. Molotov cocktail through the front door.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I was raised in the 60s and 70s. We didn't worry about that.
Yeah, politically
get a sense
correct.
Of humor.
Exactly.
Okay, anyway.
That's why it's still a Jew fish.
Yeah, see, I'm not the only one going to be sentenced to Hades.
Okay. That's fine.
All right. I have no idea what's going on in the Peace River. I haven't heard a word.
There's been a few whiting up there just above the I-75 bridge around the Harbor Heights area. There's been a few tarpon that were rolling around before this front came through way up towards like the water treatment plant, some small little juvenile guys.
I bet you they're all the way up there in lake by now with this chilly weather.
Sure.
That's 15, 20 feet of water up there. I bet you they're laying in the bottom of that hole going,
right.
Is it cold?
Exactly. Other than that, it's been very, very quiet. It's just the bird life up there has been phenomenal because a few guys that have been going up there looking have just been coming back going, I've never seen so many shorebirds.
Really?
Yeah. So they're enjoying that for that. So, personally, I'd go up there just for the sightseeing. If you catch a fish, it's an added bonus. Other than that, just enjoy the scenery and have a good time.
So, I haven't heard much about the Peace River. This is the time of year when you should be up there. There should be redfish there. Should be a lot of whiting, silver trout, spotted trout. Should have all kinds of stuff. But the river's going up and down. We're getting so much rain. People forget how long the Peace River is. It goes from here all the way up by Orlando. And any rain along that river wash, we're the end dump on it.
Right.
So Carl was telling me there's been white bait and thread fins and all that all the way up in front of Fisherman's Village. So there's bait up here, and I was thinking the rain might keep them out, but it does do the opposite sometimes.
Right. When it's drought like this, drier, that little bit of river flow is actually pushing down some nutrients that actually they feed on because they're more filter feeders. So
right.
They're going to feed on the little plankton and the little microorganisms that get washed down. So because it's fairly nutrient-rich water that comes down, even though it's brown and ugly or whatever you want to call it.
I love the old brown water.
If
this area was, beautiful, crystal clear, blue-green water, neither of us could afford to live here.
No, not at all.
You look at the price difference of the houses on the clear canals, which can range from hundreds of thousands to millions or more, and
right.
Then to where we live, where they're thousands of dollars,
Right, exactly.
Love the brown water. Love the brown water.
Exactly. So the white bait moves in a little bit for it, and to have it showing itself, it just gives you an idea on how screwy this winter has been and how it's, you know, been warm then cold, you know, those fish, normally there's always a few white bait around here and always a few thread fins, but you never really see them because they're like down on the bottom.
How'd you like to be a black tip shark right now? Okay, I'm going to go up to Charlotte Harbor. Okay, I'm going back to the Keys. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to Charlotte. Okay, I'm going back to the Keys.
Exactly.
I mean, they got to be sick of that trip already.
But the weird part that surprises me, like you say that, I'm surprised that the Spanish mackerel haven't been coming in and going in fluxes. The Kings should be coming through and going in fluxes. I mean, you think that those fish would be jumping back and forth on a regular basis, and they just have not been around in any consistency.
No, that's, and I don't know what's
strange.
I don't know what's all going
on. I mean, the water temperature for Kings has been perfect for the last 3 months, and there's virtually nothing there. You know, 2 months ago when there was all that life out there, all the scaled sardines, Spanish sardines, and threadies out there offshore, there was virtually no bonita, no Kings in any consistency. You know, you'd hear one day a week where guys got into a few, but nothing normal.
Yeah, I mean,
it's been a very, very odd year.
65.7 degrees in St. Petersburg, 70.3 in Key West. So that's really a 15 degree difference. So we're in the 60 degree range right now.
One guy had 66. 18 miles offshore.
That's right. It's 65 to 70. I'm going the wrong way. So we're looking high 60, well, 70 degrees.
That was offshore. He was 18 miles offshore and had 66 degrees.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything inshore. I'm sure it's got to be in that low 60s.
Yeah. That 68, 72 prime king mackerel. Once you jump above 72, that's when a lot of the other trolling fish come in. But now, going over to the Port Charlotte canals, some trout in the canals a little bit. We've got some snapper, a little bit of redfish in the canals.
Yeah, the redfish have moved up into all the canals a little bit more. Some, as far as legal size redfish goes, it's not your typical rat reds. But there again, they've been this canal, they're steady at it, and the next canal, there's nothing. You know, you kind of have to move around a lot. I mean, that's been our theme for the last 2 weeks is move, and move some more.
Yeah.
You know, don't dedicate a lot of time. You know, you always say it, just because you dropped anchor down doesn't mean it's in a permanent position.
No, I don't get that. It's not concreted down. It's on a rope for a reason. You know, right. You can move it.
Exactly.
And it's becoming a big thing. I'm literally giving about 40 minutes a spot and moving on.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the way I would be, or less, personally. You know, it just depends on the situation and the type.
I'm so patient. I've got the patience. I mean, I make a gnat look ambitious.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
There has been some nice jacks up in the canals, too, all over the place. And then the juvenile tarpon have been over there in, like, East Spring Lake, West Spring Lake a little bit. And Edgewater Lake has had some tarpon in it, too. You know, they're the typical wintertime tarpon that move up in there that are just there to tease you and make you frustrated as all get-go. Throw a hand grenade. That's the only guaranteed thing. But other than that, you know, it's still worth trying and playing around with for a little while. Then moving out up, you know, moving out around the beach complex and going over towards the Mayaca, there has been a few trout on that entire stretch there going from basically the beach complex over to the Mayaca cutoff. A few oddball redfish right up against the shoreline, especially there where it comes out. That's that Rock Creek or whatever that comes out there.
Rocky Creek. Yep.
There's been a few redfish right there and then some trout just out in front of it. Most of those have been small. The bigger trout are coming in some of the deeper water, 4 to 6 feet of water if you're staying out on the flats or in the open harbor. But if you're up in any of the channels, the first, you know, 100 yards of each canal, been holding some bigger trout. They've been really taking a liking to pinfish lately. Quite a few guys have been saying that the few bigger trout in the 20, 22 inch range have been coming on live pinfish.
Wow.
Letting it work real slow. They're pegging it either with a jig head or they're putting it on a popping cork, but they're making some weight to it so it can't swim around much and just trying to keep it as stationary as possible. as you get up into the Myakka cutoff itself, there are some snook up in there and a few scattered redfish. Most of those have been better in the afternoon, and that's been kind of the theme too. Besides moving, afternoon bite's been definitely better than the early morning yep. bite. There's no reason to get up at dawn's crack.
No, don't get up as late as I did today, but you know, wake up, enjoy your coffee, make breakfast, you know, watch a rerun of CSI, and just, you know,
yeah, take
make
your time.
Way down to the bait shop and get your bait, yeah, chat for a while, and then get out on the water. If you're on the water by 10, you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, you're just at the beginning of it. 10 to noon is kind of ideal time to be getting out there, and I'd be coming out as close to...
You really want to leave between 9 and 10 o'clock in the morning. You get on the water between 9 and 10.
Yeah.
And in the Myakka cutoff, got a lot of small redfish up in there. There are some trout both ends of it. Mm-hmm. You got some underslot snook and a few slot snook on both ends of the cutoff and even up in the middle. Not tremendous amounts, but pretty good amounts. But a lot of small redfish short end of the slot. Say they seem to be going from about 12, 14 inches up to about 22. And whichever school you hit just seems to be that way. But and then if you're getting around over in the Myakka River, on the outside of Hog Island, those pompano still hanging out over there?
They've been there, but they've been really spotty. Hearing just mixed reports. One guy's doing good one day, then none the next day. And then there's been some consistent ladyfish. Been a few sheephead, actually, I've been hearing about over there closer to the mangrove shoreline. That if you get the higher water, there's been a few sheephead mixed in there with them.
Okay.
The bonnet heads disappeared from over there. I haven't heard anything about any bonnet heads of any consistency.
All of a sudden, it seemed like they vacated. It might have even got a little cold for them.
Yeah, I think they moved out to that little deeper water out in the center of the harbor.
Because they love that cool water, but this 60-degree, when the water hits in the 60s, most of the sharks are going to haul butt.
Absolutely.
Now, going down the west side, again, you got a lot of redfish down there. You're looking at trout out in the open flat between the sandbar and the mangroves. Now, the redfish haven't been up under the trees the way they usually are. There's a little bit of a trough, usually from the drip edge out about 3 to 4 feet. It's where they're finding more of the redfish along that trough rather than right. up under the trees where you would suspect they were. But drifting across the flats, casting topwater is a great way to find some trout.
Mm-hmm. And throw the smaller ones like the little Spook Juniors or the Zippin' Ziggies. And those tiny torpedoes are absolutely killer for them. And they're easy.
Yeah. Tiny torpedo, that head and lure is probably the best one to go with if you don't know how to walk the dog. If you're good at walking the dog, get the little skitter wrap, skitter walk, or the, what's the Zippin' Ziggy? Or even the small, the Super Spook. Junior one, yeah. And outside the bar, you can look for pompano out there. There is some, not tremendous amounts, but there are some pompano out there.
A few oddball cobia, a few oddball bonnet heads. You know, if you get a couple warm days, they may show back up in good numbers again because they didn't leave. They just vacated, like you said, out to probably, I'm going to guess, deeper water.
Yeah, there might be something to guess that would be out towards the middle of the harbor, out in the deeper holes.
It's just been so windy the last couple days, nobody's been actually drifting the deeper parts of the harbor to say definitively what's going on with that.
Yeah.
Get a nicer, calmer day, we might have a better answer.
If you get down around Cape Hayes...
That's been a little bit more steady. Tons and tons of little trout, some pompano. Been some flounder there, but most of the flounder have been a little bit on the smaller side, but still been in a rod. Scattered ladyfish all over on it. I've heard of an incidental bluefish and an incidental Spanish mackerel, but it's really, really been just a random one here and there.
And then, you know, getting up to Turtle Bay, Bull Bay, have you talked to Carl?
Yeah, he called me and then he called you or came.
He came in to the show with us.
I forget.
But you hit it right on the money. You proved I'm not the guru. You know, there's a new guru in town.
Not a chance.
We were discussing about fishing fish in clear water down on the bottom in the grass, and I'm sure you've listened to the show, but that clear casting bubble was a stroke of genius, Robert. That really was the ticket. Carl just slayed the fish. Yeah. Tons of big redfish. You got a lot of smaller low-end slot and less-than-slot snook. But still, they had a great day, caught a lot of fish, and it was all about you, buddy. That was a really, really smart way to go. And he's rigging them with your tarpon style backwards so it pulls the water out of them.
Nice.
So he's using that, and, you know, I was telling him if I was going to do it, I'd slide a bead up before the knot.
Right.
And then, but if you're going through the little end the way you are, it really wouldn't make that much of a difference, I guess. But, you know, that
I'm just glad it worked out for him because it's been frustrating him to death, and he's usually pretty good at figuring it out with enough time.
Yeah, but that was really good, really smart. Those clear casting bubbles, and I got to contact somebody and see if they'll make some in popping cork style.
Wow, there you go.
And then you got the ultimate bobber.
That'd be pretty cool.
That would be very cool.
That would be
clear like plastic popping corks. Wow,
nice. Might eliminate some of the redfish, turn them into dust.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's going to be a biggie.
But inside Turtle Bay, you got scattered redfish all over the place, and they are hanging out in that weird grass, so you're not really seeing them. You just got to kind of work at it and blind cast around.
What I would probably do is, once again, I'm going to go for the skitter walk, the torpedo, Hedden's Air Spook, Super Spook Junior, something I can take a top water and just drift through that open flat as slow as possible, drifting, no trolling motors, no nothing, and have your stick at pin ready. And while you're drifting across there, just keep casting, and as soon as you get a boil, push that stick at pin in, stop, and then take out your bait, your shrimp, your cut ladyfish, your crab, whatever you got, your white bait. Put it underneath that clear casting bubble and cast it out over that grass where you saw those boils. But you're going to have to find them with the top water.
Yeah.
Now, it's going to be key to locating these fish is the ability to use a top water correctly.
Yep. And then the trout are scattered all over on those flats. Most of them are smaller. They're in the deeper sand holes. I would imagine that you'll find some bigger ones in that nice deep trough towards the back there going from the shack over to the cut. What's that, the Eagle's Nest or whatever? Going over towards the cut, going into Bull Bay.
Eagle's Nest.
That deep trough that runs right along there. I imagine you might find some bigger trout hanging out down inside there. There might even be some sizable snook.
I was going to say, if the snook don't eat them, they'll be there. But there's some snook in there to eat those frogs.
Oh, in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat.
Skipping across into Bull Bay, I think you're kind of in the same scenario with a lot of trout. You got redfish across the flats as well as the trout. But the snook are all going to be back up in the back. If they're there at this time, they're looking for deep holes in dark water, somewhere they can stay warm.
Yeah, and then the entrance there on the front side of Bull Bay, on the harbor side, I should say, there has been some sheep's head right there on that left-hand side, and that where that little oyster patch is at, and it drops down into that little hole, that little trough that's there. There's been some sheep's head there. There's been some mangrove snapper, a few oddball little redfish. And then out front between Turtle and Bull, or basically between Turtle and Devilfish, there has been some scattered pompano and flounder through there with an occasional redfish, but I haven't heard much in the last couple days with this wind and the funky weather. But that's been kind of staying semi-consistent for the last couple weeks, so if you get a couple warm days, it'd be worth checking it out while you're in that vicinity. Going from Devilfish up to the tailing flats or the clam fields in that area, lots and lots of trout, lots of white bait, pinfish are scattered all over the place. It is a lot of small fish, but you're definitely going to bend the rod and have a good time. The bonnet heads moved out of there too, just like everywhere. But you're going to at least have fun and bend the rod. You know, it's just, it's not super phenomenal the way it was.
Right, but it's still...
Absolutely. It's still good. Yeah, it's still very good. It's just not, you know, 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago, it was steady. Now it's a little scattered, so you want to definitely set up a drift more than anything else. You know, if you're going to do the stick it, catch a couple fish. If it dies, time to move a little bit. Or switch your casting. If you're catching the fish off the bow of the boat, go behind you on the opposite side. Vinny was running into that the other day when they were trout fishing. They were catching a bunch of trout off the front of the boat. It would die down, and he'd turn around and start casting off the back of the boat, catch fish again, and then they would have to move. So the fish were kind of hopscotching back and forth on them. Well, so I would imagine the same thing's probably going to be happening out there.
Yeah.
As you work up towards Whidden Bay, all throughout there, there's been some sheep's heads scattered around some of those oyster patches through there. Lots of little trout, few redfish. There's been some really nice redfish back in the back, but you better have an airboat pretty much to get back in there to get out safely. Yeah. You know.
You know, I was
Craig DeVault's probably the only one that's having a good time enjoying those fish.
Well, actually, I think Carl's boat's giving most of them a run for the money now.
Some of those boats will get back there, but
his little party barge. I mean, yeah. You know, we tease him. He's running a deck boat now because he's got one of these super shallow running skiffs. And for all the world, it looks like a deck boat. Yeah. It really does.
Yeah.
Like we tease him, it's got little tiny pontoons on it. So if you hire Carl, when you go to get on the boat, go, this is a really funny looking pontoon boat, Carl. You know, look at how little tiny those pontoons are. Because it's got a tunnel that runs down the middle out and runs skinny. So from the back, it looks like a little mini pontoon boat in the front. And it looks like just a little deck boat.
Yeah.
But it's got the nice side rails on it. And
yeah, it's pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah, it's just fun to tease him, though.
Oh, yeah.
Here's his party barge, his
deck boat. Doesn't look like the stereotypical shallow skiff boat or shallow tunnel hole boat, I should say.
Well, he's finally, you know, and I shouldn't say growing up, but I mean, he's finally learned the difference between a charter boat fishing boat and a tournament boat.
Right.
Because he's always had tournament boats, and they're scary.
Yeah.
You know, he wants to take the side, you know, the side rails off and all that other stuff, so it'll zip along, go do tournaments with. But I got to tell you, I'm not into that anymore.
Nope.
And I figure if I'm not most customers, if you're from, you know, Wisconsin or Illinois or Minnesota or something, and you get on a boat and all of a sudden there's no sides, no nothing.
Yeah, it's nerve-wracking. It's very, very nerve-wracking.
That would pucker it up quick. And you get that nice illusion of safety with all that stuff
on there. Absolutely.
People used to get a little nervous in my boat, and I got 12, 14-inch side walls on it.
Yeah,
absolutely. Once they're on it for a few minutes, they're like,
yeah, it's comfortable.
Way too comfortable.
Right. Yeah, a little too comfortable.
Yeah, way too comfortable. But anyway, where were we? Going down Gasparilla. We're coming in the area of behind Keopalu, the Haunted Island, between there and Devilfish, and working our way north up Gasparilla Sound on the western side, which we call the Tailing Flats there. And you've got Whidden Creek, Catfish Creek, and all these other ones. There's a lot of redfish back there and whitebait out on the flats. At least there was a couple of days ago.
Right.
Now, what's happened, tonight it's going to be in the 30s. It's going to be in the 30s.
It's chilly.
How do people live in this?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
They don't. They come down to Florida where it's warmer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Wait a minute.
It ain't. Not this week. But it's when I talk to my son, he's saying it's 4 degrees on its way down, you know.
Yeah, no.
And he's out doing some special training in like, I don't know. He's lucky because he's going west, and as you go west, you don't get the snow where he's at. He's got 6 feet of snow on the ground, you know.
Yeah, no.
No, not me.
Maybe I teach him how to build igloos.
Yeah.
Igloo training.
My apple tree grew a pear there. He stayed up north. I'm like, really? What's wrong with you, boy?
Oh,
he's way smarter than his old man was.
Let's see.
So, anyway, Tailing Flats, what's going on?
Tailing Flats, there's some scattered sheep's head throughout there. Lots and lots of little trout. A few redfish, but most of them are on the slightly smaller side with an occasional oversized one. That's about it. You got to basically move around a lot and just play around, and drift is going to be my game anywhere throughout there.
I'm going to say do the same thing you're back in Bull and Turtle Bay with. Get upwind, shut everything down, get some top water lures out, have your sticket pin ready, and just drift across, throw in the top waters until you see a boil. Once you see a boil, stick it in, and then bring out your pinfish, your white bait, your shrimp, your whatever it is. Put it under the casting bubble and throw it where you saw the boil. Fish those areas. And give it a good 10, 15, 20 minutes, and if you don't hit a hit, bring them in, put them back in the live well, and start throwing the top waters again.
Absolutely. At the Placida Trestle, it's been doing pretty steady this week. There's actually been... Even yesterday, I had some good reports of some sheep's head out there. Few oddball pompano, mangrove snapper, still a couple black sea bass, which is kind of cool. The trout have been, once again, still pretty small for the most part, with a few keepers, but just barely. That's about it. Nobody's been crazy enough to fish out there at night that I've heard of, so I can't give any good feedback on bigger snapper or snook or shark or anything. But once you get around heading up towards Lemon Bay a little bit, throughout that whole area, getting up along that shoreline and a little bit shallower water, there's been more consistent pompano and redfish still. A few oddball flounder. As you get to some of the docks from the houses and stuff, there's been some flounder, mangrove snapper, and sheep's head underneath them. Kind of a mixed bag, and it's been hit or miss. This dock's got some fish on it, the next dock has no fish on it. Next dock's got one species of fish on it, the next dock's got a different species of fish on it. It's been very, very segregated, I guess would be maybe a right word.
Yeah.
And then as you get up closer to Stump Pass, going into Stump Pass, there's been some really, really nice whiting, few flounder, pompano. The jacks have been moving in and out of there pretty consistently of various sizes, from little
I'm hearing stories 8 inches
to like 10 pounders.
I don't know what's up with the jacks. Usually they're netted up by now. Usually right. The commercial guys have got them all wrapped up and they're gone because they're worth a lot of money.
Right.
People don't realize they're one of the high price food fish, you know, for as far as the inshore commercial guys. Mm-hmm. But boy, this year, I mean, we've sold a lot of tackle. Nice. A lot of tackle, because the guy's out there fishing with his regular rod. It's like a 6 to 12 pound rod. He's got 10 pound braid on it, you know, or 10 pound mono or something, and then he gets into about a 6-8 pound jack crevalle and all his line is gone. The rod's just doubled over. It's useless. All it's giving him is a place to hang onto the reel while his spool empties out.
Right.
And they're coming in, and that's when they're going from the 2,500 stuff up into the 4,000 or 5,000 stuff, just to reel size is what I'm speaking of. You know, to get something a little more drag and hopefully a little more stopping power. And what they don't realize is, I don't even know if that helps.
No.
I don't know. Because if there's a dock, if there's anything close, I've had them go down 3 blocks down a canal and then make a right up one of the canals. Yep. And they're just gone. I mean, nothing
you can do.
They're just so strong. And if you get an 8 or a 10 pounder, you better hope you're in open water. That's the only thing going to get that fish to the boat.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's no other way. They're just amazing fish.
I love them. I love catching them.
You know, and no wonder the jack crevalle, the amberjacks, all these fish. But if you took the same weight jack crevalle versus amberjack, the jack crevalle would pull them backwards. That big broad side, when they get sideways to you in the water,
yeah,
wow, staggering. I wish they'd make a game fish.
Yeah.
That would be the one thing that could really set Florida up as a prime fishing destination, is eliminate any inshore commercial fishing of jack crevalle. Because there's nothing else like it.
No.
Those things will just destroy rods and reels.
They're fun.
I mean, I think
they could teach them to jump. You said it. They'd be the greatest sport fish in the world.
Yeah, there would be nothing else. And no one would fish for anything else. Once a jack crevalle learned how to jump, do a little tail walk, that would save them. They would be the number one fish everywhere.
Yeah.
But the only reel I can think of that might hold up to jack crevalle on the smaller size would be like a 3,500 spin fisher.
Yeah.
That might do it.
Might do it.
That would be the only reel in existence as of today, I think, that could take and actually hold up to some steady jack fishing. I mean, and there's a lot of really good reels out there.
No, absolutely.
But I was trying to think of
what the drag pressure on it and everything else is incredible.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything else with enough drag stopping power to really do good, consistent jack fishing with it. But anyway, getting off that subject, I'm sorry. Heading out in the Gulf, like you said, king mackerel been scarce. Mm-hmm. Bonita's thinned out. The tuna moved out.
Yep. Been a few Kobe out there. The near shore reefs.
You see Josh Olive from the Waterline got his big Kobe up.
Yeah, it was a nice one.
I'm sure there'll be an article in the newspaper about it, you know, because it's his first big keeper. He got it on that prototype Star Rod.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, that new prototype Barry came out with.
Right.
We had two of those, and Carl's got one, and he's landing these staggering fish on it. And then Josh lands this amazing cobia with it. And
nice. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. No, this is all done on those new prototype star rods. And so far, all good. Barry said these are almost indestructible. and I don't know, it's got some super technology blank in it. It's not going to be cheap, but boy, if it stays this good, he's got a real winner on his hands. There's a lot of really expensive rods out there, but
right,
you know, he might be onto something here. This might be something. I don't know.
I'd be curious.
So anyway, a lot of snappers, grunts, Mary's Power Pole, Helen's, all the near shore stuff, Novak, Tremblay, got a lot of fish around them. Not a lot of big fish, but the gag group are coming in. They're out of season.
Yeah, they're starting to move around a little bit more.
Are they out in Florida waters too, or
yeah,
just they're out in everything?
Out, yeah, they're out. Okay. Period.
Because we're getting a lot more reports of gags. I've heard a bunch of gags being caught. You know, because the guys can only get out so far when that wind starts blowing out of that north northeast. And it's all good till it turns northwest, and then it gets really snotty really quick. So if you're venturing to those nearshore reefs, they're 3 to 10 miles out. Keep an eye on the weather, which way the wind's blowing. If all of a sudden the boat does switch directions, head in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't
always stay out there and get beat up.
No. No matter how many fish you're catching, what's going on, as soon as that wind comes down straight out of the north, when it's northeast, you're pretty well protected. It's going to get better as you get to shore. But north and northwest, man, you're in some rough water getting back.
Exactly.
And that's all taking it off the side. That's not, yeah, you're not going to be running into them. You're going to be running them right on the side of the boat, and that's nasty.
No, it's not enjoyable. Wet, cold, and sore?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I'm too old for that stuff. I loved it when I was 20.
Yeah.
In my 20s, you know, commercial fishermen out there in that deep water, and the waves are crashing over and all that. It was just nothing but fun. That was exhilaration.
Yeah.
But now all I can think about how long it's going to take the bruises to heal.
Yeah. Yeah. It would have been nice to save some of that adrenaline dump for later on in life, but now it's time to get rid of it then.
Yeah. You know, yeah, I would have liked to have saved a couple extra brain cells.
Yeah.
I came to work, forgot my phone at the house, forgot everything. Yeah, I got nothing going on today. I came in to get all this stuff done. One thing I want to do is get our fishing report up. And I'm interrupting you all the time on that. I don't
know. It's all good.
I have no idea.
See,
why
you tell me that I'm long-winded and it takes like an hour and a half to do this. I don't know what the problem is.
Oh! Oh! I'm assuming I was just slapped. Like a snotty little kid. Bam, Frank. You know? All right, go ahead. Hit me. I'll turn the other cheek. Excuse the... You know, the noxious faltations on which cheek I'm turning at you here. So, all right. I get it, boys and girls. I've been told I'm the problem. Yeah, all right.
No.
Yeah, that's okay. I got broad shoulders.
Part of the problem.
Yeah.
Part of the problem.
Part of the problem. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm the problem. I don't care.
All good.
Anyway.
Once again, it says fish and drink on the front of it.
Yeah. This is the reason I'm self-employed. No one in their right mind would hire me, you know?
They do, and they love it when they do, because you take right over and jump right into it and get it done right.
Yeah, I don't even want to go into that.
Yeah, no, it's a different story.
Yeah, up there they always kept saying, here, you know, I want you to run this crew, and I want you to do that. No, just tell me what to do, and let me go get my money and go home. You know,
yeah.
You don't want me running this.
Yeah, you wouldn't like it.
No, I'll do it right, and that's going to really mess you up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just horrible. So anyway, we're talking about the deep water rising oil spill I was up there. So anyway, back down, let's just picture walking along the beach. Are the flounder still there?
Still there. Most of them are on the smaller side. There are a few of the decent sized ones in like that 16, 18 inch range, but the majority of them have been running right around that just barely legal mark. You know, 10 to 13 inches, staying right in that kind of consistent area. They have been getting better as you get closer to the pass. I don't care which pass it is. Any of the passes, that seems to be where your fish are mainly concentrating. The larger whiting, the pompano, your sheep's head, the flounder. With the exception of, I was getting really, really good reports of a lot of pompano on the north end of Boca Grande, like from 19th Street down to like 7th Street.
Right. That's the same place I've been hearing about the flounder.
Yeah.
Nice keeper flounder in that midsection. Yeah, the middle section of Gasparilla Island.
Yeah, and a gentleman was in here this morning. He went out there yesterday with his wife, and they went from 17th Street down to what he figured was probably somewhere closer to 10th Street and didn't get anything. said it was really slow, but he walked. They went down to the pass, and then they saw some guys getting some whiting, some sheep's head, and some other miscellaneous fish too.
But fish don't have anchors in their little buttons.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know,
it's just frustrating when you hear about it from several different people, and then one person goes out there and they kind of get their heart broken. It's kind of a drag because you feel bad. Because I mean, I never take. Whenever we give these fishing reports or we do it in the papers or whatever, I'm not going to mention that they're catching sheep's head in July just because one guy went out and caught four of them that day. I'm going to tell you about the fish that I had several different people tell me about, you know, in different episodes. It's not just that one oddity or one moment. I want consistency. So when you hear that consistency.
You probably spend, what, 2-3 hours a day on the phone?
Probably.
He's probably on the phone for 2-3 hours a day talking to people about fishing. He's in the store here, and that's probably another 2-3 hours discussing fishing with people. And that's where these reports come from, is Robert, he talks to everybody. Robert's phone is constantly ringing, and you know, on his days off, he has to turn it off because everybody calls Robert.
Yes, the wife should tell you that otherwise.
So
it stays on, and she gets mad. You're on the phone again. Four-letter words.
Yes, I know. I say them too when I go in there. I'm going, oh God, he's on the phone. Okay, I'll wait a little. And then I see him hang up, and I go, okay, Robert, what about? Oh God, Robert. Okay, yeah. I'll get you on the off phone, because I mean, this is where we get all our fishing reports from. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what you get paid for. Fine fishing.
I just want to be the consistent one. You know, I don't like to BS. I don't like to mislead anybody on it. You know, I want to try to be as accurate as possible with it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm going to believe you on this one.
I'm
the problem. Yeah, okay. I got it. I got it all. I'm the problem. Yeah, that's okay. You heard it, boys and girls. I'm the problem.
We can rewind the tape. I don't think I specifically said that.
Anyway, walk along the beach, good chance of catching flounder, pompano, sheephead, but they are moving a little bit. And with the weather changing, everything is going to change. And, you know, and when you read the fine print on the bottom of this page, you're going to know that all fish can move, and we may not be exactly where we say they are when we say they're there, but we're doing the best we can.
Exactly.
Okay, that was that for a disclaimer.
That was really quick, too. That almost sounded like those guys.
So anyway,
here's something that's kind of cool. You know, you've taught me this long time ago, is the Lewis and Clark thing of going out, looking around, experimenting, checking things out. Tuesday is going to be your lowest tide of the year.
Really?
It's going to be like a -5.8 or a -6 or something like that.
Wow.
It's going to be a terrifyingly low tide. And it'll probably be blowing 100 miles an hour, probably be cold, but it's going to be one of those days where it's worth bundling up, going very, very slow, and going out and learning either some of your favorite fishing spots, but in particular, going out and learning new fishing spots.
Actually, now, Tuesday, high of 74 degrees.
There you go.
not overly sunny, but Sunday, Tuesday, partly sunny with a high near 74. Southwest wind 7 to 16. So that's going to eliminate. Oh, gusting to 23.
That might change the tide. Oh,
yeah,
still.
That's going to change the tide a little bit. It's if this was a northeast wind, it would be perfect because it'd be blowing even more of the water out. Right. You could go out and literally take pictures of the landscape of the harbor.
But look at Monday and Wednesday, too, for the tide.
Yeah, I haven't looked, but
because they're both significantly low too. They're like 5-something and on both sides of it. But Tuesday's like the lowest of the 3 days in a row.
All right. Now, Monday. Oh, Washington's birthday. Gee, I'm thrilled.
It's probably not technically its birthday. It's just a day off.
Right. It's a reason for the government employees not to do their job. Mostly sunny, high near 71. East northeast wind around 6 miles an hour, becoming south southwest in the afternoon. So Monday would be a good day to be out and doing this. You're gonna go out and have a northeast winds. The tide will be pretty darn low. It won't be perfectly as low as the day before, but you're only dealing with a 6 mile an hour northeast wind. So Monday's your day to go out and do the Lewis and Clark.
If that's accurate with the NOAA thing.
Well, this is from NOAA.
That's what I'm saying, though. If it's still a yeah. weatherman, I don't care where yeah. it comes from.
But what I don't get is you get overnight light and variable winds, then during the day it's 10 to 20.
Right.
I don't get it. I don't understand it. But I'm going to go take a weather course.
Look at the tides for those couple days.
Yeah, I don't have the advanced tides on here, I don't think. I'd have to look on the tide chart. Maybe I can.
It's pretty amazing. But either way, it's going to be incredible because, I mean, you've got such significantly low tides where you can get out and kind of drive around and find some of these areas. I mean, obviously, if the wind's blowing that hard out of the southeast or southwest, I mean, it's going to be not as cool as you would expect, but it's still a good time of year when you want to go out and look for all your new spots and try to learn some of the topography of the harbor itself. But going back down to the passes, because you're walking the beaches and you're getting close to the passes, if you want to drift the passes right now, the mangrove snapper bites kind of picked up just a little tiny bit. Still not great, but good enough where it's worth playing around with. Been some nice sheep's head in both Boca Grande Pass and in Captiva Pass. Captiva Pass, Redfish Pass, I've been hearing of some decent mangs. A lot of big whiting on the edges. Some flounder and pompano both down there doing pretty steady. And then there was some bonnet heads and a few black tips mixed in throughout there. But it's gotten a little quiet in the last couple days. So if it does warm up by, you know, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, whatever, it should start to see that change back fairly quickly.
Yeah, I'm trying to look at the tides here, and I'm not doing a very good job, but
right.
I don't know why it's not clicking on it. I highlighted it, but it didn't do anything. So, anyway, lots of cool stuff going on. Robert's going to find a tide chart. Cool. I hate computers. I work on them all day.
We'll go back to the old faithful with paper.
Yeah, you just forgot to give me the glasses so I could see it, but it's okay. I got it. What's the date today? The 13th. So Monday, we got a -5 at 8 in the morning. At 2:43, we got a 1.0, and then 7 o'clock at night, we got a 0.7. So Monday morning is the time to get out. You're going to have a northeast wind with a -5 tide. And it's -6 on Tuesday, so you got 1/10 of a foot more. So, yeah, -5 northeast wind on Tuesday, Monday. So Monday morning, get out and do your Lewis and Clark around the harbor.
It'd be kind of cool.
It'd be very cool. Maybe we'll do that. Maybe we'll do that. See if Dad will play hooky
out of
work.
It's a holiday. It's going to be a hard day for us to get out of here. Mm-hmm. You and him might be able to, but both of us will be a little tricky.
Yeah, maybe I'll try and get out with my camera.
There you go. It'd be a good day for you guys.
Yep.
As you get down into Sanibel and Ponarasa area, a lot of trout down there. There's been some pretty decent trout, but you've got to drift over those deeper sand holes and work it real slow. I mean, slow has been the key right now. Use a rattle trap, kind of. I would actually almost hop it across the sand holes.
Use the Fish and Frank rattle trap. It works great in that shallow water.
Yeah, but I'd be fishing in that 4 to 6 feet of water for those
guys.
Okay,
you need a standard rattle trap.
Yeah.
Yeah, normal rattle trap.
And just work it real slow. Be prepared to get some grass on it, but working it real slow, hopping it through those deeper sand holes where it's a little cleaner. That's been working real well. Some of your bigger paddle tails, like your 3-inch with something with a little bit bigger tail on it, I would personally say something gets a little bit more thump, but you can work it a little slower.
What's that, Slayer?
Yeah,
Slayer's got the big, it's got a little bit bigger tail and a real soft connection to it. So going with the Slayer on a Rockport Rattler head would be your way to go.
Right. Also, just plain Jane shrimp. Just work a shrimp on a Rockport Rattler or any of your favorite jig head and just work it just nice and slow. I'd rig it up personally. I'd rig it up weedless or through the tail. Just jigging it along very, very slowly. The puffer fish are terrifying down there still.
Guys were asking me because we did this whole thing about bobbers the other night. And, you know, why do my bobbers keep having pieces missing out of them? Puffers.
Yeah.
You got to beak like a parrot.
It's amazing the damage those things can do. I mean, if they got 3 pounds, you'd never get in the water.
Well, I don't know, but they got a beak on them like a parrot, and boy, they will. If you look on your styrofoam floats and you see teeth marks in them, it could be a lot of different fish. But a nice clean little thing like you scooped it out.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, that's funny. Puffers, and it's a nice little round notch. And they're amazing.
Crescent moon.
Yeah, a little crescent, and I mean they'll bite into anything. I've watched them. Doing the scientists back when we were doing our TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that? They were showing us how the mouth thing put the little ruler, you know, those 1 foot rulers, stuck it in his mouth, opened his beak up, and he bit right through it, busted the ruler
that
up.
That was funny. That was good stuff.
Robert and I had a TV show for about 3 years.
Yeah, it was fun. That was good
we
stuff.
We got to do that again.
That was entertaining.
We got to do
just,
that again.
That was just good stuff.
Yeah, well, we're going to do video fishing up on here very soon.
Perfect.
Now that
get the best of both
worlds. We've got a new hire who can actually run a camera.
Yeah.
Never thought about that, but hey, now we got a camera guy.
There you go. Might be a good time.
Yeah. Because you're blind and I can't hold anything still.
Right.
I mean, if I go to take a picture of you, I get you, the doorway, you, the wall, you, the ceiling, you know. You don't want me running the camera. And you can't see, so, you know, between the two of us, we're useless. But we just hired somebody who's good with a camera.
There we go.
Didn't realize that. That's cool. Our That'll new part-timer.
Work. That'll work.
All right. So video fishing is on its way, boys and girls.
That'd be good stuff.
He just started work tonight, so we got a photographer working for us.
Perfect.
So that'll be great. Where are we at? Down by...
Sanibel, working our way kind of up the intercoastal.
You know where we got to go fish? We got to go down to the trestle on the Caloosahatchee. I got to take you up there and fish that.
That'd be kind
of
cool.
I really enjoy that. I like fishing in front of the marina basin there, those big snook.
Yeah.
And then up around the trestle. We'll get Dad to go with us, and he knows that area pretty good.
There you go. I've never been down there.
I knew it.
I have never fished that anywhere other than right at the mouth of the Caloosahatchee.
I was pretty good at it back... Oh, in 2000, 2002, but I haven't really fished there much since then.
Yeah.
But I was pretty good at it back then. But Dad's been there. He was doing that one job there just a few years ago, so he'll have to go with us.
There you go. Refamiliarize with it. Be pretty cool.
Yeah,
I would like that.
Yeah, we'll take my boat and run down from here. So
that'd be really cool. Holy crap.
Yeah, well, it doesn't cost me any more to drive my boat down there. It does the car, and it's easier.
Yeah,
you know.
But that would just be cool. See, that would be really cool.
Yeah, we can go around through the Intercoastal and come back up through Mont Lachey, or go through Mont Lachey and come back up the Intercoastal, eating Christie's, what is this, cherry cake, strawberry cake?
Strawberry cake.
It's good.
Strawberry bread, technically. It's kind of like
cake.
Kind of like banana bread.
Exactly what a diabetic needs.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfect for you. At least you're eating it in little small bites. It's all good.
That's how I get away with eating sugar.
Yeah. Small doses.
Yeah. So anyway, boys and girls, down there in the Caloosahatchee, you got a lot of trout, small gags, from what I'm hearing up on the flat a little bit. Don't know about the sharks or anything in there around the inside or outside of the island.
A couple days ago, there was tarpon at the causeway. You know, I've been hearing about those at the Sanibel Causeway and at the Cape Coral Causeway. Haven't heard anything basically since 3 days ago, but there were some fish there. So
I think if you're bored at night, I think they were staging up there, getting ready to, with this cooler weather, push back up the Caloosahatchee, hit some of those deep spots in the river where it's going to be a lot warmer.
Right.
That would be my guess.
No, it would make sense without a doubt. But if it does warm back up for a consistent amount of time, it might be worth going out there and checking late at night.
Are you being sneaky getting in there?
If you're a night owl, it'd be worth checking out.
So, St. James City?
St. James City, from St. James City, working your way up towards Mont Lachey. A lot of little scattered redfish.
Lots of little redfish down
there.
I mean,
lots of them. The sheep's head have been real consistent, though, in the same places those redfish are at. They're in those deeper sand holes, and then a lot of those little mangrove shorelines have those real weird deep cuts underneath them. And they're hanging out in some of those. The snook have been there, but they've got lockjaw. I haven't heard any good reports on snook anywhere down there in the Sound. Guys are seeing them, but not getting to cooperate very well. Juvenile tarpon, again, I was hearing about a couple days ago in the Cape Coral Canals over there, right around the Mont Lachey Bridge. Some sheep's head mangrove snapper. The catfish really made a real big push in there a few days ago, too, from what I heard. I haven't heard anything bad since then, but there was some pretty good catfish in there.
Yeah, well,
they seem to go in spurts this time of year. It's kind of funny because you won't hear anything about a catfish for days, and then all of a sudden a guy caught, and he just, you know, that's all I caught was catfish in that spot, but the day before I caught nothing but trout. You know, it's kind of funky.
Yeah.
It's fun. You know, it's just different. It keeps you on your toes anyway. As you're working up, Matt Lachey going up towards...
Jug Creek Shoals.
Jug Creek Shoals, Boquilla, that whole area. That place is still doing fairly consistent with a lot of trout. Most of them are small. Work it real slow there again. Whiting on the little sandbar right there.
On the outside?
Yeah. The guy got into some really nice whiting there and some silver trout. He caught like a dozen and a half nice silver trout.
Wonder why it is that wherever there's whiting, there's usually silver trout.
I don't know.
They seem to go together.
Yeah.
Like up by 75. You get same when the whiting thing. Are thick, you got a lot of silver trout there.
Yeah, it's weird.
You know, silver trout do not have a size or bag limit on them. You can take whatever you want, but...
Which is weird, because they're not abundant.
Yeah, they're not an abundant fish. Not like spotted sea trout. There's way more of them.
Oh, yeah.
And, but make sure it's big enough to actually get something out of it. You right. Don't just keep them because you can.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's you're not cool if you got a freezer full of fish. You're embarrassing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you're an embarrassment. If you have a whole freezer full of fish, it means you don't like fish. Not that you're killing them. That it's just, why would you want frozen when...
You can have fresh.
You can have fresh. I mean, the whole idea behind being in Florida is to go out and get a fresh dinner. Right. You know, exactly. Go out, catch it, cook it up, and have a nice meal. And there's usually something you can catch. Even catfish are great eating. If you only catch a couple of catfish, take a few fillets. If you have a deep fryer, the only way I really like them is deep fried, because otherwise you get too dry.
Right.
But anyway, we'll go over that later. Working around Two Pines, coming up towards Burnt Store.
A lot of little redfish along that whole flat there. A few pompano on the outside edge of the bar. A lot of trout on top of the bar and on the outside edge of the bar. Been kind of quiet, though. I mean, not a lot of guys fishing it for some reason this past week. A few guys, but not a ton. The majority of the guys seem to be concentrating at that Burnt Store channel. Pirate Harbor is... You got to take a number.
Yeah.
You know, it's like standing at the deli department at Publix right now. Take a number. Mm-hmm. Wait your turn.
Yep.
You know, it's amazing that those fish even stay in any of those places with the amount of traffic, fishing lines, and slamming of boat lids and cussing at each other because you parked right on top of where I was casting, things going on.
A general rule in Florida is when somebody's fishing, not in the canal situation, but let's say you're out on the flats. The general rule is you should not be able to cast to the boat next that's there. Mm-hmm. If there's a boat there, you want to figure at least two good casts, and then you can fish. Or the next island over. If the islands are a little closer, they're on one island, you can fish the next island. But if it's a small island, and they're sitting there, and they can easily cast to both ends, you don't belong pulling up to that island.
Right.
You go to the other side of the island, go to one down or up, but... No, you don't get to just pull in there because there's room for your boat. If he can cast into your boat, you're too close.
Right.
It's just, you know, courtesy. If you're there fishing and somebody else pulls up, you're going to freak out, call them names, do all the rest of this stuff. You know, it's... To keep it as a general rule, a good long cast is about 100 feet.
Right.
And you want to be a little more than 100 feet away from another boat. Figure 4 or 5 boat lengths. Right. You know, that would be a pretty easy way to figure it out. But if you figure when you're pulling up that you can cast and hit that other boat, you're too close.
Exactly.
So, anyway, coming around the east side of the harbor, we got some fish inside the bar, some fish outside of the bar. But on these super low tide days, what you want to find is where the bar has breaks in it, where there's a way for the fish to get back and forth on the lower waters. So if it's a very high, well-defined part of the sandbar, that's not the place you want to be. You want to find where that cut is. You want to get the fish as they're leaving the flats as the water drops down, or trying to get back on the flat as the water comes up and get off to one side or another and fish that cut. That's where you're going to find your fish. And it's easy because they're going to go through those holes. They're not going to crawl across the sandbar.
Right, exactly. You know, and the variety of fish that are over there right now, I mean, you've got your redfish, you've got your few snook, you've got all sorts of trout on the inside trough, on top of the bar, and on the outside edge of the bar.
And you know, I've actually heard of a couple guys motor dredging, prop dredging in the back there, trying to create some artificial holes where you tie the boat off to the trees, and then you tie the back of the boat off to the tree, and then put the boat in gear, and then just let the prop wash out a big hole.
Right.
I've had a couple of people come around the corners and seeing people tied to trees trying to create artificial deep spots. You know, and it's really, I guess, not a bad idea. I mean, no. It is illegal. You yes. will get a hell of a one heck of a ticket for it.
Right.
I mean, it is definitely against the law to do that. You're not allowed to dredge. It's a national estuary, even though they should. If they turned me loose with a backhoe and a barge, we'd have 40-50% more fish inside of 2 to 3 years than what we have now. And I mean, literally, it would take 2 to 3 years, and I'd have a 40+% increase in fish. All species, tarpon, snook, redfish, you name it, there'd be a huge increase in all the fish. I just need a backhoe, a couple of barges, and I'll fix it easy. But anyway, I was just thinking, because we were talking about the water being so low, and the fish want to fall in these holes once that water comes down, and how funny it is, guys are actually trying to create holes to hold fish.
That's pretty funny.
You know, little secret spots. I guess it would might work, but I don't really know if it would or not.
Yeah,
it
may, no but idea.
I don't know.
I don't know if it hurt. I don't know. I'm torn.
It's not
on that
hurting one. Anything. It's just.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all silt eroded in. It's a lot shallower than it used to be. There used to be holes back there.
Right.
It's not like they're hurting anything. I mean, it's absolutely illegal. And if they do get busted doing it, they're in big trouble. But the point of the matter is, there are some guys doing it, and I wonder if it actually would work.
I'll bet it would.
I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence with this. I don't know. A hole is a good thing.
I don't know if they can build a bit, you know, dig out a big enough hole to make a significant enough difference with it, unless they were really patient and sat there moving back and forth, I guess.
For quite a while, yeah. It would take a while at idle, you know. But the idea behind it is when your boat's tied off, your prop's got to, you know, push all that water, and that pushing of the water just blows a big hole like a jet, you know, like you're using a jet pump. But anyway, snook back against the mangroves, they're all over the east side. There's a bunch of them back there. There's some much bigger redfish. If you can brave that really skinny water to get to the back of those islands and find those deep cuts, those little deeper holes, there are some really big redfish back there.
Yeah.
Middle slot and up.
Yeah.
I mean,
absolutely.
Nice fish. As you get up around Alligator Creek,
parking lot.
Yeah, you're getting back into the parking lot aspect. A lot of trout, some pompano, a few jack crevel. You got a little bit of whiting. I mean, there's a little bit of snapper, a little bit of all kinds
kind of
a stuff.
Mixed variety.
Right
there. Yeah, you know, definitely getting a mixed bag.
And there's a reason it's a parking lot is there is fish there. And then as you come up around getting into ponds, I don't know if they're still dredging. While the dredging's going on, it seems to really, you know, obviously slow the fishing down. But it seems like almost right when they're done, the sheephead are moving in, a lot of these other fish move in. Because it's been dredged and dug up, it exposes all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, the little tube worms, crabs get disoriented, you know, they just lost their hole that they had dug out, their condo's gone.
Yeah, I mean, they're...
And the little shrimp that are buried in the silt and the sand there, they're washed out and moving around trying to figure things out.
You know,
it's a good, bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to keep that waterway open. I mean, it makes a nice habitat, but while they're doing it, it does disrupt and disturb all the little creatures, which these other creatures feed on. And so you will get redfish and trout and drum and especially sheephead coming to check out, you know, all the exposed new stuff.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a quick move in and then they're gone again. But once it's all done, I mean, it'll just take a little while and everything will settle back in.
Yeah.
But going back up in the canals, hearing stories of great fishing for jack crevel back up in there.
Great jack crevel. I mean, the jacks, you know, once again, phenomenal. I mean, 2 to 15 pounders you're hearing of
spoons.
All sorts of sizes.
Spoons seem to be the big thing. Johnson Sprites.
That's stick shad.
Yeah, the storm... The storm twitch is...
Twitch sticks, I'm sorry.
Yeah, the storm twitch is the number one. Johnson Sprite's close number two. Gold or silver, both are working.
Even slow trolling your rattle trap through there is working real good.
Yeah, casting the fish in Frank's rattle trap doesn't go down real deep because jacks feed from the middle up. They're not... They'll hit stuff down deeper, but not as much. You want to stay up a little bit more. and start and stop it, move it quick, and keep it towards the top. And
been some nice redfish in there too, along the rim canal, especially as you get back to that one deep 20-foot hole.
Yeah, a couple of guys doing night charters there, you know, trying, people wanting to catch some snook and everything, have been complaining that they're catching way more redfish than they are snook.
Yeah, the snook bite's been, for under normal situations, that snook bite's usually incredible right now, mm-hmm. and it's been exceptionally slow.
Yeah, but well, they're
the redfish.
I wouldn't say exceptionally slow. I'd say it's slower than normal, but I think what I've been hearing about is 5 to 6 snook on a night trip and 15 to 30 redfish.
Right.
You know, instead of 20 or 30 snook or 15 or, you know, 10 or 20 snook, actually way more numbers than normal on the redfish. I mean, makes a great night trip. I mean, and redfish are not great night feeders, but they've really just gone on crazy there. Yeah. All the rules are out the window. No, there's no, okay, rhyme, reason, anything. Let's jump from PGI Canal. Anything else back there?
Not really.
Okay, let's go out to the Alligator Creek Reef.
It's been a little on the quiet side because of the wind the last couple days. The handful of guys that have gone challenged it a little bit, they're getting some sheep's head, some nice mangrove snapper. Heard of a couple short cobia, a few oddball Spanish and bluefish out there.
Yep.
You know, you're going to bend a rod. It's just fighting this wind and being safe about it has been the big thing. You want to be comfortable, and you definitely want to be safe.
Well, the hard part about it is, as if and when we do get a calmer day, there is some great fishing. We do need a little more consistency to our weather.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'll go through and double check here, but it's not, the weather's not really, you know, great, but it's not bad.
Yeah.
I mean, we got Saturday high of 64. Sunday it's 73. Monday we got 70 degrees. Tuesday we're back up in the real weather. We get about 75.
Right.
So by Tuesday we'll be part of the real world again and back in the 70s where actual humans can live. You know?
Exactly. You can function.
Yeah. Oh God. Terry and I were talking last night about how long it's been since either one of us have been in minus temperatures. -5, -10. You know,
wow.
I've been out in back in the 70s. It wasn't that uncommon to have -15, -20.
Right. You know, where honestly, I can't remember it. But I can't remember it. I can remember the last time I was in snow, but it wasn't minus, but it felt like it to me.
I get it.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Yeah.
I honestly can't.
No, last time I was up north in the winter, I think the coldest it got while we were there was probably about 28, something like that.
Right.
It wasn't super, super cold.
Right.
It was about 28.
That's still cold. That's still miserable.
Something about it, though, a lot of places up there, we were in northern Wisconsin seeing one of my kids, and it was drier that day. And when it's dry, you know, low humidity, which is nice if you get that wind that doesn't have all the humidity in it,
right.
Which is hard because you got Great Lakes over you, inside of you, and all that kind of stuff. But it's amazing how it just doesn't feel that bad. And I still fall back to when I was a kid, it'd be so cold, and then it'd get up to about 35, 40 degrees, put on a flannel shirt, go ride a motorcycle all day.
Right,
you
exactly.
know, oh, it's hot.
Yeah, it's funny how that works.
And now it was like 69 in the house this morning, or 68. I built a fire.
Nice.
I was had a fire going. I ain't going outside. It's too cold. It was 40-some degrees out. There's no way in heck.
I don't blame you.
Yeah. About 9 o'clock, venture out in the front porch because it blocks the wind, and it's
nice.
The sun
and sunny.
Cooks
that's,
right
that's
into that
perfect.
Front porch of ours.
That house is designed just perfect for that.
Yeah. When you go on the back porch in the summer, it's nice and cool and, you know, shady. But in the winter, you walk out the front door, and it's usually about 20 degrees warmer than whatever the air temp is with all that sun. It gets hot. You start sweating out there.
Yeah.
It's 40 degrees out.
Your house
sweating.
Blocks that wind perfectly right there. So, I mean, it's just awesome.
Yeah, really lucky. Very, very lucky. It just worked out that way. It was the only place we could fit it. So,
stuck it there. And it worked out perfect.
So, anyway, I don't know if we got anything else to do in radio fishing.
I think we covered it. We covered it, yeah. Main thing is have a good time. Don't forget the tent sale.
Right. March 14th. I mean, I know you're listening to Radio Fishing. Click the tent sale button. It is the coolest day of the year. it really to come and learn from the people who make the equipment is absolutely the big thing. What was it, 8 years ago, Robert and I think it was 8 or 9 years ago, we were at a tackle show, a trade show, buying show, whatever you want to call it, and we're talking about how much some of our customers would enjoy what we were doing, because we had hit one of those lucky times where we're actually talking to somebody from the factory. And, you know, it always goes, okay, what do you got this year? What's new? What's cool? And all this. All right, now, what do I got to buy to get my pricing? You know, how much, you know, if I buy this much, what do I get? If I buy that much, what do I get? And, okay, and now what's the cool features of this and all that? And we were, you know, it's a whole learning process. You've got to learn what you're buying, why you're buying it, what it's for, and then what kind of pricing can you get? And it's just it's very interesting. It's a lot of fun. And that's what we wanted to recreate for you guys. And that was the basis behind this. It's, yes, it's a sale day. It's a buying show. You come to negotiate, find out what you need to fish with, what's the best thing to do it with, negotiate a price, and buy something and go. It's not, this isn't the show where you're going to come and get a leaflet. You know what I mean? They're not going to hand you the pamphlet and say, okay, check this out. We're coming out with that next year. You can ask those things, but it's not that type of thing. It was literally designed by us for you so you could experience what we do. And I know it. And then we one-upped it. Remember we tried the casting tank and it was a disaster.
Right.
The casting tank was horrible. Couldn't get to it. And, you know, one guy on it, the other guys couldn't get to it. And then
people
last year,
see it.
Yeah, it was a nightmare. And last year we got everybody their own casting tank. So every lure company gets to devote all their time to working with you and the lures in their own private tank.
Absolutely.
And that was unbelievable.
That was,
I mean,
awesome.
It was
awesome. I only
awesome.
Got to see it for a minute because I was running around, yeah. but
to watch
cool.
The guys from Apollo work it, Mark Nichols from DOA, I mean, he set his thing up, so he had his table and the casting out from underneath. He's standing behind a table with all his stuff on it, tossing over the top of it, dropping in a tank, and then he, whenever there wasn't anybody between him, he'd throw in the Rapala tank and work his stuff there.
Nice.
Then he'd throw at Mirlure's tank. I mean, Mark Nichols is, you got to meet him. If
he's
you haven't met him, you got to meet
him. He's just such a genuinely awesome guy.
And then you go over where Eric Botnick, the Mirlure guy who's working the Mirlures and stuff, and he always has a crowd around him. And then Chris, the new guy from Sabeel, the big boss with Sabeel now.
Interesting to watch him playing with some of those lures.
Really, really looking forward to that. And we've actually hired a photographer this year to kind of document some of this stuff because we've having so much fun and we're so busy. We're running. Robert and I are literally, it's barely time to catch your breath all day. Thank goodness and thank you for that. But it's just amazing. And the one thing everybody says, I'm known for several things in the industry, but the number one thing I'm known for is the best customers, best clientele in the business.
Absolutely.
There is nobody like our customers. They are the best people on the planet. They ask the best questions. They work their deals the best. They're not whiny. They're just good, solid people. And
absolutely.
That's what brings these guys back every year. We've never had one person say, no, I'm not coming back.
Right.
Never. I mean, not one that we actually invited back. We've actually said, please don't come back. You know,
right.
We just ignored them, but no one's ever not asked to come back.
Denied.
Yeah, denied. No. The only reason that would happen is because they don't treat the customers the way we want them to.
Right. Customers are number one.
That's what it's for you guys to enjoy this and just get excited about it. And I think you can tell I'm really excited.
That's the only thing that keeps us going through this because holy mackerel.
Oh, yeah.
We're walking zombies.
So, yeah. So anyway, we're way over time. Let's see. They're gonna end the show. Let's see. Yay! They're gonna have to shut up. Okay. Yeah, we're talking too much. All right. Here we go. A little exit music. Okay. I'm gonna have to change the guitar track, but I like it.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's nice.
So anyway, this is Fish and Frank in the chair, and Robert in the chair across from me. And as usual, we can't thank you enough for listening. We're going to do more on the water reports. We're trying to get a bunch of new stuff up and talk with more and more captains. And all I can say is thank you guys for everything you do for us, man. It makes our life possible, and we enjoy our lives, and we enjoy having you in. So
absolutely.
Anything? Say goodbye, Robert.
Goodbye, Robert.
Yeah. Bye, everybody.